Good morning. I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. First established in 1933, Anza Borrego Desert State Park is the largest state park in California, and its 640,000 acres takes up one-fifth of San Diego County. Within its boundaries are 12 wilderness areas and 110 miles of hiking trails, featuring an extraordinarily diverse range of Colorado or Sonoran desert habitat, from jumping cholla to barrel cactus to mesquite. And if you time your visit to Anza Borrego Desert State Park at just the right time in the spring, you might even catch the flame red plumes of the ocotillo and the single greatest wildflower display in the state, not to mention acre upon acre of palm groves, year-round creeks, slot canyons, and badlands. It's an amazing place, and we're very fortunate to have Anza Borrego right in our backyard. And because Anza Borrego has been preserved as a state park and basically left as it was back in 1933, natural cycles have been allowed to continue without interruption from man, and those cycles include geologic cycles. Anza Borrego's natural desert environment preserves some of the most unique features of the Salton Trough, where the Pacific Plate is slowly, ever so slowly, separating away from North America, dropping some areas below sea level, and revealing the inner workings of the Earth's crust and plate tectonics. Anza Borrego was the site of the 1987 Superstition Hills earthquake, and the San Jacinto, Elsinore, and a number of smaller faults can be plainly seen passing through Anza Borrego if you know which trails to take and have a good, high-clearance vehicle to get to them, or a very patient pair of feet. And here to make sense of the geologic jigsaw that is Anza Borrego Desert State Park is a very, very special guest. We're very lucky to have him here today. Paul Romica, a retired California State Park Ranger at Anza Borrego and a whole lot of other California state parks, and the author of the definitive book on Anza Borrego's geologic wonders, Edge of Creation. And Paul also contributed three chapters to Sunbelt Publications' new book, Fossil Treasures of Anza Borrego, which is available now. He's one of the foremost authorities on geology and paleontology at Anza Borrego. And in conjunction with the Anza Borrego Foundation and Institute in Borrego Springs, Paul is leading the Institute's 2008 Desert Hostile Geologic Field Trip to the Long Valley Caldera and Mammoth Mountain in the Eastern Sierra. That's going to be happening August 10th through August 17th. Although if you want to go, you got to get signed up and registered with the Institute by Thursday, July the 10th. Paul, welcome to Tree Huggers International. It is great to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me today.
It's very, very nice to have you here. Thank you for making the drive up here from Borrego. We appreciate it.
Oh, always. No problem.
You not only worked at Anza Borrego for many years, you were also a ranger at some state parks all over San Diego County.
Well, I first started in 1973. I tried to get on with the Department of Parks and Recreation for 3 years as a seasonal. They finally, I guess they got tired of seeing me come in with the paperwork, so they decided to hire me. And I worked as a seasonal at Torrey Pines State Reserve, Santa Leo, and South Carlsbad for a couple of years doing maintenance and visitor service chores. And then I became a permanent intermittent at Old Town and Silver Strand and Border Field State Parks for a while. And then I got hired on permanently as a badged ranger. And I basically have worked every Southern California beach unit all the way up to Doheny, San Onofre, and San Clemente.
And then you were in Big Sur for a while. Were you working there as well?
Well, actually, I got tired of the coast. And this was back in 1981, so I decided to move out to the desert. And they actually hired me, and they gave me a Badlands assignment. And I worked out there in the Vallecito Badlands for a couple of years, about 7 years, off and on with various sectors. And then I got married and moved to Big Sur for 3 years. And then my wife moved back to Borrego, so I had to come back. So I came back in 1990 and worked there until 2005.
So you grew up in San Diego, correct?
Spent my whole life in San Diego County, right.
Growing up on the coastal side of the county, was there a bit of readjustment when you went to go work in the desert side of the county?
Not really. I spent a lot of days vacationing in Anza Borrego. I've done a lot of hikes, hiked a lot of the Palm Canyons and explored in the Badlands off and on my own time. also hiked in the mountains, in the foothills, in the chaparral. So I knew it real well. I knew what I was getting into. But my first work in there, it was May 1st of 1981, and it was 115 degrees. So that was kind of a shock.
Welcome to the new assignment.
Yep. Hottest month on record, 1981.
And so upon coming to Anza Borrego, you almost immediately became interested in the geology of the area.
Well, I went to San Diego State, and I tried to major in geology, but I ended up minoring in it. And I wasn't getting anywhere on the coast. And when I transferred to Anza Borrego, on my fifth working day, which was my first day in the field with a patrol vehicle, and I was down in the Vallecito Badlands, and I was on one of the established dirt roads down there, and I came across some fossil footprints. And I knew what they were, but I was also told that the paleontologists that were working in the park for 30 years prior to that day had found everything out there, had done it all, the story's all written, it's always been a desert, these mountains have always been here, and the story has already been done. It's completed. And all of a sudden I found these fossil footprints, so I figured, well, they probably know about this, but I should report it because that's what my responsibility is, I thought. And I reported it, and I'm telling you, 3 days later, the phone was off the hook. People, they were wanting me to come down there and show them. Well, actually, they first thought I was nuts. There's a green rookie ranger out in Anza Borrego. He doesn't know what the heck he was talking about. And I went down there, and I had to take pictures of the fossil footprints and mail it to these paleontologists that were working in the area. And bingo, that's all she wrote. And I ended up being stuck in this fossil resource hole ever since. And I learned how to identify the fossil footprints, and it's just been it opened up an entire new world to me. And since then, these paleontologists took me under wing. They showed me their bone locations and invited me to help dig and excavate the bones. And one thing led to another, and all of a sudden, one day they took me to this camel spot, the camel bone sticking out of the wash, and I'm looking at the bones, and they're commenting about how neat it is and everything, and I reached out and picked up this rock that was next to the bone. It's a piece of petrified wood. And of course I raised it up, and what's this? Oh, that's a piece of petrified wood. It's desert ironwood. And I go, how do you know that it's desert ironwood? I don't believe it was a desert back then, you know, a couple million years ago. And they said it's desert ironwood because that's what's in the literature. And then they turned around and threw it over the cliffside in front of me. And I'm going, whoa, that's kind of weird. Now, why would you be throwing a fossil away? They weren't really interested in the fossil. I'm thinking, oh, the wood's really important because it'll tell you about the paleo-environmental conditions, then the climate, you know, if you accurately identified it. That really bothered me for a while. And I looked it up in the literature, and sure enough, there's this geologist that has one sentence in his publication that all the petrified wood in the Anza Borrego Desert is desert ironwood. But there's no, how did he identify? There's no proof. There's no nothing. And so I actually learned how to identify petrified wood. It was not easy because no one else would help me. They knew how to do petrified leaves, leaf material, but not actual wood. But I actually, through trial and error over several years, learned how to identify the woods in Anza Borrego and actually published a scientific paper on them, identifying the woods. And that started me off on that end, too. So and then the identity of the wood, they turn out to be not desert ironwood, but ancestral forms of bay laurel, California walnut, California buckeye, Oregon ash, black cottonwood, not the Fremont or desert cottonwood, Dudley willow, Pacific madrone, and a monocot, a palm.
But these are things that all grow in more hydrated areas.
Yeah, they're a temperate hardwood flora, and they need at least, you know, 50, 60, 70 inches of rainfall a year to exist. They grew on the Colorado River Delta at that time right here in the Salton Trough. But the neat thing about that one piece of wood they threw away led me to summarize, there was no mountain ranges here then, 3 to 4 million years ago, that were high enough to become rain shadow, or to become, you know, make Anza Borrego rain shadow desert, basically. They weren't high enough. So we had a Pacific fog influence still rolling in, whereas right now they get held up by the peninsular ranges. And there's also a fog influence from the Gulf of California. So that is not only a temperate hardwood flora, but it's a maritime flora. And today, that wood flora only occurs along the central California coastline at Big Sur. It's the understory hardwood community of the Coast Redwood Forest.
So before you had arrived, it wasn't just the general consensus, it was fact. At Anza Borrego, this had always been a desert, period.
That's what I was told.
And the climate had never been anything else before then.
Again, that's what they told me. They were trying to fill me in on the history of the area, and I wasn't asking any questions. I was just absorbing it like a sponge, you know, because I was brand new.
So with that awareness of the different plants that were growing there millions of years ago, did that bring into focus the effect plate tectonics had on the Anza Borrego region?
Yeah, that led me to something else. I was also told, and you have to understand, the Imperial Valley, most of it's below sea level. Most of the Coachella Valley north of it's also mostly below sea level in part. So it makes sense that the Gulf of California directly south of the border must have came in and filled up that topographic low at one time, because we have marine sediments, we have marine fossils all the way up to the city of Palm Springs. Makes total sense to me the way they were thinking. But if you look at it, if you really get in the field, and I'm a firm believer of field evidence, I don't like to make things up. On the west side of the Salton Trough, there are all these marine outcrops and marine fossils that date back to the late Miocene from the Gulf of California. They're in Whitewater Canyon. There's some Garnet Hill, for example, Biskra palms, Push Wallet palms, Truckhaven Rocks, and then the Anza Borrego, especially the Carrizo Badlands area and the Carrizo Impact area, and down south into Yuha Badlands. On the east side of the Salton Trough is the San Andreas Fault. Everybody says it's the most active fault in the area outside of the San Jacinto, and it's moving in a right lateral strike slip sense. So Anza Borrego has been translated in a right lateral sense away from mainland Mexico by several hundred miles. Well, you know, if you have a bathtub and you fill it with water, let's say you fill it up with the Gulf of California marine waters, and then you drain it, it will leave marine sediments and fossils on both sides of the bathtub, right? Well, how come there aren't any marine sediments and marine fossils on the east side of the Salton Trough? It's because we've been moved away and out of the Gulf. So if you backtrack the San Andreas Fault movements a couple inches a year for several million years, all the way back to where the marine sediments on the west side of the San Andreas Fault match up with the marine sediments that do outcrop on the east side of it below Yuma, bingo. What did I just do? I just erased the Salton Trough. It wasn't even in existence then, and Anza Borrego was down in the Gulf of California then. So that is a very dynamic setting. So there was no Imperial Valley, there was no Coachella Valley for marine waters to even encroach in at that time, and since then we've moved to our present position with that day pack, if you will, of marine sediments and fossils on it.
And then this only occurred over 4 million years.
Well, since the Miocene, the late Miocene, so that was about 5.3 million years ago. So yeah, within the last 5 million years.
Which is not that long ago in geologic time at all.
No, so that's brand new. So that makes more sense to me than the other story that the Salton Trough was always there. Again, the mountains are always there, and the marine waters were filled it up. The only reason there's no marine waters in it right now is because the Colorado River built a delta across the trough. Yeah, that makes sense, but it doesn't work. There's no field evidence to support it.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe, and joining us is writer Paul Romeka, a retired California State Parks Ranger working on a new edition of his book, Geology of Anza Borrego, Edge of Creation, and planning a geologic field trip to the Long Valley Caldera and Mammoth Mountain in the Eastern Sierra in conjunction with the Anza Borrego Foundation and Institute. Now, as I understand it, Borrego Valley is a sunken block that kind of got left behind, and then the Santa Rosa Mountains, which are the northern end of the valley, they were the San Jacinto move those mountains there? Is that a little bit too simplistic to describe it?
Okay, keep in mind that not only has the Salton Trough recently evolved, but the north end of the trough, including Anza Borrego, it's a rift shoulder. It occupies a location on the Peninsula Range shoulder. So the Peninsula Range has been uplifted like a tilt block mountain range, so it's dipping or tilted to the west, toward San Diego. Now, east side's opening up in a big hole, so there's some pull apart going on. And when you pull things apart, you have things go up and things go down. In this case, the Santa Rosa Mountains have gone up on the west, and they're controlled by a fault at the base of it, and they're down on the east. Now, the downdrop portion is represented by the Coachella Valley. So they're a tilt block range dipping to the east. Then you have Clark Dry Lake, and then you have another little mountain range to the west of that called Coyote Mountain. It's also controlled by a fault on the west, Coyote Creek Fault. And that's also a tilt block up on the west, down on the east. So you have a little series of basin and range topography in there. And what does that reflect? Crustal extension. So those have nothing really to do with the San Jac at this time, the San Jacinto Fault. They have already occurred, and then the San Jacinto has kicked in. And that's a strike-slip fault. That's actually pulling apart the sediments down from the Truckhaven Rocks all the way north up into the Rockhouse Canyon in Anza and Terwilliger Valley, and then some. That's a major player on the lay of the land right now. It's constantly moving, constantly active, and that is separating things in a right lateral sense. But it's also pulling apart the basin where Clark Dry Lake is. But basically, those faults that are uplifting the mountains in a normal sense, in addition to the San Jacinto, which is basically a strike-slip fault, are all considered part of the San Jacinto fault zone, and they're controlling Borrego Valley. Borrego Valley is actually, if you really see it, it looks pretty flat, but it's a half graben. It's canted down on the east. So the eastern half is the topographic low of the valley, and the western half, where Borrego Springs is the upthrown half.
Now, that's one of the most seismically active areas in California, if
right.
I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about the effect the 1968 Borrego Mountain quake and the Superstition Hills earthquake in 1987 had on the area? Did they have an effect on the area, or were these pretty much garden-variety seismic events?
No, there's something going on. It doesn't happen in our lifetime repeatedly every 10 years, any 20 years. You know, you can't really predict earthquake activity in the area, but something's going on out there, and it has continued to go on to the present day. We've had a lot of activity recently in the last couple of months. But the Borrego Mountain earthquake, that was in 1968, April, I believe. That was the first earthquake I've actually felt here. I've felt every one since. And I'm telling you, they really give you a ride if you're in a mobile home. That was on what's called the San Jacinto Fault, or the Coyote Creek splay of it. But, you know, the names of the faults don't really mean much to me, because they, when you're in the field, they just don't add up. There's a strand that does come up the backside of Ocotillo Wells in the Ocotillo Badlands, and it steps over the Badlands and deforms them, and then it runs along the east side of Borrego Mountain in East Butte, and then it makes a turn towards the Borrego Badlands over by Third Wash, and that's where the epicenter of the 1968 earthquake was. My way of looking at it is, if you don't make that turn and look at the sediments directly north of it, there's a lot of Miocene-aged sediments that outcrop in and around the Borrego Mountain area. And then you have San Felipe Wash, where the fault is inferred to continue up into Coyote Canyon. But across the street from that wash, there's still those same Miocene sediments at the entrances to Hills of the Moon and Rainbow Wash. The same Miocene sediments. There's no offset in there that I can see. So I don't infer the fault to go up that way like the textbooks show. I believe it makes a right turn. And then the actual San Jacinto Fault, which is in our area called the Clark Fault, comes through Rockhouse Canyon, crosses Clark Dry Lake, cuts into the Truckhaven Rocks a little bit, and all of a sudden it makes a bend and kind of points towards the same direction. So I believe, and I can't prove it 100% at the moment, but it makes perfect sense to me, since that strand over by Borrego Mountain is really active, that the fault steps over and becomes the Clark, which is now the most active fault. And there was a big shocker over there in the Truckhaven Rocks back, I believe, in 1954. Now, if you trend the other fault strand further to the south, the Superstition Hills and Mountain area, we had two main shocks back in 87. It was a magnitude 6.2 and a magnitude 6.6 within 12 hours of each other in that vicinity. So that's active too. And that may trend even further south into the Imperial Fault, which is very, it's a scary fault. The last time it moved was in 1940, I believe. And then it moved again in 1981. And it's way overdue. In fact, on the entire San Jacinto Fault Zone in the Anza-Borrego area, the majority of magnitude 6 plus events on the Richter scale averages 1 every 8 years or so. I mean, it could be 12 years, it could be 4 or 5 years. The last movement on it, the big movement, was in 87. So it's a lot more than 8 years ago. So we're really overdue for a major shaking, unfortunately.
Two questions. First of all, there was a 5.5 quake around Anza about 3 years ago in 2005, right around the town of Anza. Was that more on the San Jacinto?
Mm-hmm. That's the big money maker up there. When you stand it on Terwilliger Valley and you're right at the top of Turkey Track looking down into Coyote Canyon and you see that fault trending off towards Rock House, it is a scary sight to see. It just reeks of activity. You can just, it's gnarly when you look at it.
So if I was a betting man, I might want to bet something's going to be happening there in the next 20-odd years.
I had someone actually look me up and wanted me to do some consulting work for them up there because they wanted to build a house on this one flat area, and actually visited it, saw the fault right below. Said, no, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And yeah. He didn't. He didn't to this day.
You may want to bolt the house to the foundation here, pal.
I don't think that would help. Not that close to the fault.
The other question was the Imperial Fault, and of course there's that famous photograph from 1940 of that offset orange grove down by the U.S.-Mexico line.
Oh, that's on the Imperial Fault, right?
Yeah. Now, is that more related to the San Jacinto, or is that more related to the main strand of the San Andreas? And I know this is outside of the park that goes up along the east side of the Salton Sea.
Keep in mind there's various versions of it. Either one works. If the San Andreas Fault terminates at the Salton Domes, which is an active spreading center at depth, if you follow San Andreas along the east side of the Salton Sea, it makes a bend over by the Indio Hills, and then it goes to the Beaumont-Banning Gap, and then it continues straight from like Palmdale as a straight shot all the way up to the Mendocino coastline. Well, if you don't make that bend as you trend south from Mendocino all the way down to Palmdale to the Cajon Pass, if you don't make that bend, it becomes the San Jacinto Fault. That's where the two bifurcate. So, I look at it like the San Jack could be. I mean, you can argue with me if you want to, but the San Jacinto Fault may, in fact, be the San Andreas Fault. It's so active. Whereas the San Andreas of today, nothing really is going on over there.
Or there's a load-bearing issue, like the San Jacinto is sort of picking up some of the weight of the San Andreas.
It could be locked, or it could have stepped over and become the San Jack as a younger feature on the landscape. On top of that, the San Andreas Fault is notarized as the dividing line between the North American Plate and the Pacific Plate. You can also look at it differently. The San Jacinto is in there somewhere. And then just to the west of it, in about a 30-mile bracketing, there's the Elsinore Fault. You have the San Andreas, then the San Jack, and then the Elsinore, and then down here you have the Rose Canyon, Inglewood, Newport, continuations of it. So about every 30 or 40 miles, you have this beautiful fracture zone on the crust out here. My way of looking at it, if you follow the Elsinore from the Los Angeles Basin down past Anza-Borrego and then into Mexico, becomes the main Gulf Escarpment, which is a big escarpment that controls everything west of the Gulf of California. And it controls the Peninsula Range block that is canted to the west again down there. What if the Elsinore is the actual plate boundary and everything west of it is the Pacific Plate and everything east of the San Andreas is the North American Plate and everything in between those two faults is no man's land? We term it Anza-Borrego. It's just a different way of looking at things because again, the story that I was presented doesn't make a lot of sense, so try to take a different tact, different avenue, if you will.
So you are planning a new edition of your Edge of Creation publication. That was first published in 1992?
Yep.
And so what's going to be new in this particular book?
Well, I got okay to rewrite it, and a lot of people think I'm just revising it a word or two here, a sentence there, but I'm actually rewriting the whole nine yards, and I'm going to make it 25 to 50% bigger. I'm going to add a lot more meat to it, a lot more information and data that we've gleaned over the last 10 to 15 years, rewrite some of the field trips, make them more extensive, and also add a lot of stratigraphic data to it and paleontology.
Any idea when that's going to be available?
I have a deadline to turn in by next March, and it's probably going to take another year of editing and checking things out, I'm sure, and getting into a book format, so probably another year and a half to two. It's fun. I've been wanting to do it for several years now, but, you know, other things get in the way, so it's time now. So that's what I'm devoting most of this next year towards.
And then you just contributed three chapters to the new Fossil Treasures of Anza Borrego book.
Right. There's a handful of experts that were asked to write a chapter in that book, primarily on vertebrate bone. They're all experts in their field with an Anza Borrego connection. And I was asked to write three chapters, which is kind of cool. One was on the petrified wood that I've worked on for the last decade and a half. The other one was on fossil footprints, which continues to just be an eye-opener. We keep finding new things all the time, and it's just amazing stuff. A unique resource unto itself. And then I was asked to write a chapter on age dating of the Badlands sediments. A lot of people ask me and other people how old this stuff is out there, and the answer they get is, I don't know. Or it's Pliocene, or it's Pleistocene, or it could be both. I learned how to do paleomagnetics, which is kind of cool. If you have a continuous section of strata like we do, there's in the south end of the park, it's over 14,000 superimposed feet of shingled and stacked sediments. That's almost three times the thickness of what you have at the Grand Canyon if you stand at the south rim and look down into the Colorado River. I learned how to get paleomag out of the sediments, the normal in reversals, and how to correlate them to the global polarity timescale, which I've done. And that's been interesting. So I can actually take you in the field and show you a bed of rock and tell you how old it is that way via paleomag.
And you're going to be leading a desert hostel in conjunction with the Anza Borrego Foundation and Institute.
Right.
And when I say desert hostel, I say that as H-O-S-T-E-L, not hostel as H-O-S-T-I-L-E. Yeah. It's basically a geologic field trip. Is that correct?
We started this about 3 years ago. This will be the third desert hostel. I've led the first two up into the Colorado Plateau. The idea behind the desert hostels is Anza Borrego has sediments that are locally derived in it, has sediments derived from the Gulf of California, the marine sediments, and it has sediments derived from the Colorado Plateau via the Colorado River. And then we have the volcanic ashes, which are derived from Mammoth Lakes. So the first two desert hostel trips were field trips, auto caravan-type field trips. And we went into the Colorado Plateau because we have sediments from that in the state park. So that's the connection. And we whitewatered the Grand Canyon, the Western Grand Canyon, and we took a boat right out to Rainbow Bridge, and we, you know, explored Zion and the Narrows.
And while you're there, right?
Yeah, why not? Big barbecue at Marble Canyon Lodge. You know, just it was the first trip and the second trip are just the funnest trips that you can imagine. And now we're going to go up to Mammoth Lakes. We're going to stop in Lone Pine and visit the Alabama Hills and the beautiful Lone Pine Fault escarpment there that moved in 1872.
That's a big one. That's a neat place.
And talk about the geology of Owens Valley and the uplifting of the Sierra Nevadas and the uplifting of the White Mountains. We're going to visit the ancient bristlecone pine forest in the White Mountains too. And then we're going to work our way north and visit Mammoth Lakes. I'm going to show them the Long Valley Caldera. It's 10 miles by 20 miles, so you don't even know you're in it. It's a big caldera. And I'm telling you, when that thing blew and collapsed, that it left a big hole in the earth. And we're going to go see that, go see the resurgent dome that yielded the ash of Thermal Canyon. drop down in the Devil's Post pile, take a walk down to Rainbow Falls for lunch. We're going to go to Lookout Mountain and see the actual caldera and point out Glass Mountain and a few other features, and then visit the Indio Hills, the Mono Craters, and end up with a canoe ride on Mono Lake to the Tufa Towers.
This is a pretty extensive trip.
7 days. Actually, 7 nights.
Yeah, you can call the Anza Borrego Foundation and Institute at area code 760-767-0446, or you can go to their website, which is www.theabf.org. That's a T-H-E, A, B as in Bravo, F as in Foxtrot, the ABF for the Anza Borrego Foundation.org. And again, that number for the Institute in Borrego Springs is area code 760-767-0446. Paul, this sounds like it's going to be a pretty neat trip. So how many people are going to be able to go?
I believe they have a limit of 20. And I think we have anywhere from 10 to 12 registered right now. So there's a few more openings. They've been fun so far, so I'm looking forward to doing this one. And then next year, I think we'll go to Capitol Reef or somewhere else that has a tie in Anza Borrego. Maybe even Yellowstone. Wouldn't that be cool?
The footprint fossils you found on your first day on the job at Anza Borrego, What kind of an animal was that?
Well, it came back to being a llama and camel. And not my first day, but after a couple of days later, looking around, there's cheetah, river otter, shorebird footprints, and dog, and, you know, ancient coyote.
But you said camel in there.
Yeah.
In North America.
Yeah.
How old are these fossils?
They range from, at Camel Ridge in the Vicelo Badlands, it's 3.4 million years in age, down into the Fish Creek Badlands, which are 4 to 4.2 million years in age. There's a whole series of continuous exposed basin margin deposits that have nothing but trace fossil footprint evidences of the vertebrate fauna in them, and they lack bone evidence and they lack the petrified wood evidence. It's just a whole zone that has all these footprints in it, which is kind of nice. And then in North Fork of Fish Creek Wash, there's an area that is yielding some beautiful camel footprints as well that are even older in age. They could be anywhere from 4.6 to 4.8, so about a million years older. So there's a whole horizon footprints out there.
Wow. So that's amazing, and again, that's wonderful that this area has been left so undisturbed.
It's an out-of-doors museum. That's the way I look at it. It is an out-of-doors museum. And it's just been a pleasure to work there for the last 25 years, off and on. I just really want to thank you, Tommy, for having me today, and it's been a pleasure.
It's been great having you. It's been wonderful talking to you. It's I learned something new doing this program all the time, and I'm just thrilled you made the drive up here, and keep in touch.
Well, thank you.
And have fun on the mammoth trip. That should be remarkable.
We will.
We'll have to get an update on that afterwards.
Sure.
Paul Romica, thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. Many thanks again to author and retired California State Parks Ranger Paul Romica for coming by for an enlightening, fascinating discussion. Big thanks, Paul. Great having you on the show. For more information about the Desert Hostel trip Paul is leading to explore the geology of the Long Valley Caldera and Mammoth Mountain and that whole region, contact the Anza Borrego Foundation and Institute. The deadline to register is coming up. It's July the 10th. That's Thursday, July the 10th. The trip runs from August 10th to August 17th. And you can contact the foundation at www.theabf.org. That's www.theabf.org. And that's T-H-E, A as in Anza, B as in Borrego, F as in Foundation.org. You can also call the foundation at area code 760-767-4063. That's 760-767-4063. and that's the Anza Borrego Foundation and Institute, www.theabf.org. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, would love to hear from you. Let me know at tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM 94.9 website. That's www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Again, this is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation. It's on the way next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.